Deerhead Radio on AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Jimmy Purdy is brought to you by Shifting Gears in Paso Robles, 1621 North River Road. Shifting Gears has you covered from your weekend cruiser to your daily commuter. And now let's join Jimmy Purdy on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM, and KPRL.com.
All right, good morning. Welcome in. Thanks for being here. Quite a morning to wake up to, right? Windy, a little stormy. It's nice, though. Nice little change of pace. Anyway, welcome in. This is Gearhead Radio. If you haven't tuned in before, I am Jimmy Purdy from Shifting Gears Auto Repair, located right here in Paso Robles. Phone lines are open, so give me a call, 238-5775. That's 805-238-5775. Or 238-KPRL, whatever's easier for you to remember. But call. Questions, comments, anything going on with your vehicle, anything in the industry you want to talk about. I always enjoy the phone calls because it gives me a segue because I don't really prepare anything. So at least gives me somewhere to jump off. But I do have a few things we can start with. At least get the ball rolling. Get this thing warmed up. Get my voice warmed up a little bit. Just a tad bit under the weather. So bear with me here. And if you don't catch what I say, that's okay. I'll try to repeat myself as much as I can. So today, let's talk about the weather because that's what we started the show with. It looks like morning rain and wind, but it should be clearing up later today. High of 57, getting down to 34 is a low. Tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high of 60. We are getting down into 32 degrees. So we're getting down into freezing. Keep that in mind because a lot of components in your vehicle do not like extreme temperatures. And that's what we call an extreme temperature when we get down to freezing. Similar to when it's over 100 degrees. It's just as difficult on components. Batteries in particular really take a toll when it gets that cold. Now, we don't get like prolonged freezing temps, as you know, around here. So you don't really have to worry too much about, you know, putting the de-ice on and making sure, you know, you have the alcohol in your windshield wiper fluid. Unless you're way out in Creston, that's a possibility. But a little tip, if you need, is adding some isopropyl alcohol to your washer reservoir. And that will keep that those lines and keep that water in there from freezing. And we've also heard the tip a few years back, which is always great for these early mornings when you're waking up a little late, running behind, you get outside and you notice your windshield is iced over. Unless you have an ice scraper, which we're in California, so I don't think a lot of us have windshield ice scrapers. It's not really a big problem. But if you take a little bit of the isopropyl alcohol in a small spray bottle, you can always just throw it in your glove box so it's convenient. You just give it a little mist and it just melts away. Then turn on your windshield wipers and it's all good to go. It's also good for reconditioning those wiper blades. You take a little bit of it and even just spraying it on the windshield will get enough on there to recondition that rubber. But if you take them and actually wipe them down with a paper towel or a cloth that's been dipped in some isopropyl alcohol, that really helps to recondition the blades and get a few more months out of them. Maybe one more season. So, and they're getting expensive. You know, wiper blades used to be $8-$9. Now they're $40. It's like $40 for wiper blades. Yeah. That's where we're at. When wiper blades become expensive, we know we're in trouble. But yeah. So little tips like that are becoming extremely much more helpful in this day and age because $50 for a set of wiper blades every year, that will add up. So, and, you know, as you know, around here, we don't use them that much. I just had this conversation yesterday about having air conditioning in the shop or having heating in the shop. I went and we got a couple of those outdoor patio heaters to put in the shop to just try to take the edge off the cold in the morning. Because by about 11 o'clock, it's fine, right? The doors are open, the sun's coming in. It's still cold. It's probably 40 or so, 45, but it's manageable. You put a sweater on, you're moving around, it's good. But when you get there in the morning and it's 30 degrees, it's a little hard to get moving. So we put a couple of those patio heaters in just to kind of take the edge off. Then we can shut them off. It's not a big deal. My point is I was having the conversation about installing like a heat system. And it just doesn't make sense because we don't have a prolonged period of being that cold where it would make sense. We would have the heater on for an hour in the morning every other day and have it off by noon. Like that investment was like, that doesn't make sense. Same with air conditioning. Like we have a few weeks where we're over 100 degrees and then it goes away. It's like, well, it's almost easier if you're in Arizona or you're back, you know, on the East Coast when it's freezing all day for months on, you know, months and months. Then you make that investment and then you can run it and it pays for itself. But then you got to live in those environments and that's not fun either. So a little off course there. That's what happens when you don't call. I just go off of an on a segue. So give me a call, 805-238-5775. We'll talk about what you want to talk about. But anyway, weather. So yes, today I brought that up because it looks like it's clearing up later today, which hopefully does. A couple big events going on. Of course, the big one is downtown here in Paso, the Victorian Showcase, which is the famous Vine Street. Mr. Scrooge himself will be out there. If you're listening, I'm looking forward to seeing you, Rusty. So hopefully he's out there yelling at the kids. That's always fun to watch. So if you don't go for anything else, at least go and watch that because that's always a good time. So hopefully it clears up because that's going to be tonight from 6 to 9 o'clock. If you haven't been there before, highly recommend it. They're going to shut down Vine Street and you get to go check out all the Victorian houses that have been decorated. And then there's tons of free snacks and drinks along the way. Tons of people, music. It's a good time. Also, Christmas in Cayucas is the Winter Wonderland Walk. So if you're looking to get out of town, that's from 4 to 7 today in Cayucas, which is the Winter Wonderland Walk. Also a great time, and you're on the coast. It's always nice in Cayucas. Something about being on the coast. It's never that cold. Might be a little windy, though. But that should be a good time, too. So that's also tonight from 4 to 7 in Cayucas. Check that out. What else do we have? I think that's pretty much it for events that I know of. If you know of anything going on tonight or this weekend, give me a call. Let me know what you got going on. As far as car events, I think the Toy Bank Drive was at Daniel's Woodland last weekend. That was an awesome event. I don't know who was there, but that was a huge turnout, which was really cool. I think we might be wrapping up the car shows for the end of the year, unfortunately. If you have something that you know of going on. I know the cruise nights, I think they're getting pretty small. But if you have something going on as far as a cruise or a car show, you can give me a call here. We can announce it now. You can come by the shop. Let me know. We'll put it on the website. We'll promote it. I do like promoting those community events, especially when it comes to the automotive stuff. I feel like there's not enough. No, not that there's not enough. It's that they all happen on the same weekend. So we got to spread them out a little bit more. But at least that gives you options, right? It also keeps from one event being way overcrowded because that's also not fun. You don't want these, you know, $80,000 cars and thousands of people walking around them. It makes everybody a little nervous. Hey, good morning. You're on Gearhead Radio. Are you there? Oh, change your mind. That's all right. Maybe that was a butt dial. All right. Well, speaking of events and driving around, I did have an article I want to bring up because I thought this was pretty interesting. You might be getting your Christmas tree this week. You might not have got it already. Good morning. You're on Gearhead Radio. Can you hear me? Check 1-2. Check 1-2. Nope. Someone's got me on speed dial. That's all right. So this was an interesting statistic from AAA. They found that almost 20% of people had their Christmas tree fall off of their vehicle while bringing it home, which is pretty surprising because they're not cheap. You'd think you'd do a little better job tying it down. So it says the season for strapping a pine tree to the roof of your car and then dashing through the snow, sometimes at highway speeds. There are safe and unsafe ways to do this, of course. And since the internet loves to point out people who choose the latter option, it's time for us to once again offer tips on how to carry a Christmas tree on your car's roof without doing any damage to the car or your pride. So the American Christmas Tree Association, which is a nonprofit organization, says that it expects 22% of those displaying a Christmas tree this year will opt for a live tree. Executive directors say the group is encouraged to see that consumer demand for all types of Christmas trees remains high in 2024. Yeah, that's exciting. And also added, there's no such thing as a bad Christmas tree. What do you think about that? That's debatable, right? Good morning, you're on Gearhead Radio.
Yeah, hi. I was just wanted to ask a question quick.
Yeah, what you got?
You know on the Mazda, it's the Mazda guy.
Yeah.
On the Mazda, yeah. It has a, where the thermostat goes, that little housing, it has two, like, thermostats, one for, I don't know what's for, and one for something else.
Maybe.
You know what I'm talking about?
I know you have a thermostat. You have a dual thermostat in that?
Well, not a thermostat. Those little, it's like a temperature. It should tell you the temperature.
Oh, okay, yeah. You have a two-wire, which is for the computer, and then you have a one-wire, which is for the sender for the gauge.
So I think they're both two wires.
They're both two wires?
But well, they're right next to each other. What I'm going to say, how is it that, like, how did those go bad, considering there's just like a copper thing in it?
That's a good question. I'm right up against a break, so when I get back, I'll go over that. Thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
And on that, we'll be right back.
Hey, Rini, look who's at table 6 again today.
I know. Even without his suit, you can tell who he is. I think he's trying to figure out why Lynn's pies are so good.
But he's been here every day this week.
Well, I don't think he's trying very hard.
Maybe we should just tell him about your original recipes that use real fruit and just the right touch of real cane sugar.
Never corn syrup.
And that they're handmade right here in Cambria.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, can you see what he's doing now?
Wait, wait, wait. This is the best part.
That's real good.
Smart Santas can order Lynn's handmade fruit pies and food gifts to be shipped anywhere in California and the United States by phone and at lynnsfruitbin.com. You can find Lynn's handmade pies at your local Central Coast grocery store and the Costco freezer section to bake at home for Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Oh, that's real good.
It's Lynn's.
Mars Megastorage, your state-of-the-art storage solution on the Central Coast. Mars Megastorage can store your RV, boat, car, household, or commercial items in your own fully enclosed unit or covered storage space. Our on-site amenities include security cameras throughout, gate access from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. with your own personal gate code, 17-foot high steel walls for extra security, fully paved, and a wash rack with professional pressure washer, buckets, brushes, and soap, as well as a dump station, all while providing our guests the highest quality of customer service. We encourage you to come see all the guest features we have to offer. At Mars Mega Storage, we strive to give you the best possible storage experience at the best possible price. Big or small, we store it all. Mars Mega Storage, 101 Wilsona Road in Paso Robles. Call us at 467-3200 or visit marsmega.com.
Every piece of jewelry is something to be treasured for a lifetime. It can be a symbol of eternal love or a family heirloom. When your jewelry needs repairing, you want to put it in the hands of someone you trust. At Bella Jewel Fine Jewelry in Paso Robles, you'll find Mike, a highly skilled master jeweler with over 35 years of experience, who stands behind his work. While some jewelry stores outsource their repairs, Bella Jewel does all repairs on site in their modern state-of-the-art repair shop. You can count on quality repair services with fast turnaround. Even if you didn't buy your jewelry from Bella Jewel, they are there to help. Stop in for a complimentary ring inspection and free repair estimate. Located at 1224 Pine Street, downtown Paso Robles, one block north of the park. Bella Jewel offers fine jewelry, exceptional service at affordable prices.
And welcome back in. You're tuned in to Gearhead Radio. This is KPRL AM 1230, if you forgot, or 99.3 FM. I do appreciate you being here and listening in. It's not much of a show without you here, so, again, I do appreciate that. Otherwise, it's just me in this small box talking to myself, which I'm used to, so it's okay. But it makes it a lot more fun for me if you're here listening also. So thank you. So before the break, we had a call about engine coolant temp sensors, and I'm going to dive into that. But let me quickly go over my finish up my Christmas tree thing here, whether you thought it was important or not. Somebody's going to get something out of it. So I just want to give a quick tip on that because it is the season and you may or may not be doing that this weekend because it's the time to do it. I don't know if you like to do like the day after Thanksgiving or give it like a week. So that way there's a little separation between Thanksgiving and Christmas. I appreciate that, right? Give Thanksgiving its time, wait about a week, and okay, now we can do Christmas. We can't just blur them together. Just give it some time, right? Anyway, you're picking up a tree. Some tips to take it home, right? How do you get the Christmas tree home? Well, the best one is to just have your buddy with a truck do it. Ask a friend. That's the easiest way, of course, but that's not always an option. So the best way is the roof is the best. You want to put the trunk facing the front of the vehicle, but before you put the tree on the roof, go get yourself a nice big moving blanket or tarp. Lay that down, put the tree on top, and then wrap it like a burrito. And then tie it around. Now be careful when you're tying it down because you're probably going to be going through the doors. Now you want to go through the door frame with the window down. If you go through the door frame first and then shut the door, you're going to damage the weather seals. So you don't want to do that. You just want to crack the windows a little bit, run the rope through there or the strap through there. That's the easiest way to do it. Some good ratcheting tie downs. Easiest, quickest way. Avoids putting any damage on the top of the vehicle and also encapsulates it. And then if it's a moving blanket, now the moving blanket's got a nice Christmas tree scent. So that's an added bonus. So I just want to bring that up. I thought that was a pretty interesting statistic that a lot of these Christmas trees end up on the side of the road because they're not tied down or anchored properly. And they're expensive. And that ruins Christmas. Now you've ruined Christmas. So don't do that. All right, back to the coolant temp sensor question here. Why do they fail? What are they? What are we even talking about? So when you start your vehicle, some of the older ones actually would tell you what the temperature is on the gauge. Now, the newer ones, if you're talking in the last 10 years, it really just tells you something that makes you feel good until it gets too hot, and then the gauge will just go straight to hot. It's not a thermistor-style gauge, as in it's not linear. As each temperature rises, the needle slowly moves up. A lot of the car manufacturers now have decided they just want the gauge to stay in the middle and then go to an extreme if it gets to a certain temperature. So say once you hit 230 degrees, it will just bury the needle to hot and say you're overheating. But anything under 230, it's just going to stay right in the middle. Unfortunately, that's just how it is for the newer vehicles. Oil pressure's that way, the temperature gauge is that way. There are some that are accurate and they are linear, but for the most part, on average, I have to use the scan tool and get in through the computer system to see the actual temperature because I cannot rely on the gauges. Now, the older vehicles, like when in the 90s and early 2000s, they were a little more transparent and they would show you what's going on. So the difference, the main function is either being positive coefficient or negative coefficient. Okay, we're going to dive into that. So what that means is that as the resistance or the temperature changes of that sensor, it changes the resistance of it and then moves the gauge one way or the other. Now, typically, you're going to have a positive coefficient, meaning if you were to disconnect the sensor, the gauge is going to go full max, hot. So if the wire were to be cut or the sensor be disconnected, they've designed it so that the gauge will just peg to hot and then you stop and see what the problem is. Because if the wire is disconnected, you have no idea what the temperature is, so it'll just move it to hot. Same with the other style sensor. Now, when he called in, he asked, there's two ones, and typically there's a two-wire sensor and a one-wire sensor. What that means is the sensor itself either has one wire that attaches to it or two wires that attach to it. Now, the important thing to know the difference here is that all sensors with two wires are going to be a computer style sensor, meaning that input is going straight to the car's computer to relay that information. The one wire sensors are typically for the gauge. And why is that? The two wire runs its own ground to the sensor and then that sensor wire out. The one wire sensors rely on the body of the sensor. When you screw it into the head, block, intake manifold, wherever it's going to, that's where it grounds the sensor out. So the computer needs a more accurate ground, so it runs its own ground to that sensor as a relay circuit. And it's also for its own self-testing purposes. So if that two wire would be disconnected, the computer knows that we don't have a ground, so it's going to say circuit high, meaning that the plug, that there's no, the circuit's gone high because there's nothing loaded on that circuit. So the voltage goes up because there's no ground. That's how it determines that that circuit is now open or high. If it goes circuit low or shorted, means the wire has been melted or the sensor itself has failed. Now, that was the question that he asked. Why do they fail? Well, it's basically a resistance sensor. So they do fail. It's not super common, but it does happen. And what happens is if it does overheat and it gets hot, the resistance part of that inside the sensor will short internally. And then you have a circuit low code or circuit shorted code. And if that's when you have to do a wire integrity check to make sure that the wires from that sensor to the computer are not rubbed through or shorted out on something, meaning they're not, the wire is not rubbed through and it's making contact on a grounding point, then that sensor itself internally is shorted, and that's how that code gets set and why the gauge is going to just be stuck low all the time. That's not a super common thing to happen, and that's why the manufacturers run it in a positive coefficient style, because more often than not, the wire is going to get cut, chewed through, or the sensor is going to get left disconnected, and that would peg that sensor high. So that's kind of like the default, right? They want to, hey, stop the car. It looks like it's overheating. Oh, it's not. The sensor's just unplugged. Plug it back in, and life's usually good. Every once in a while, the sensor will fail open, where it doesn't short out internally, and then the gauge will set hot. Now, everything in between is pretty rare to happen. It's usually going to fail completely one way or the other way. To say it never happens, I couldn't say that, because there's always shades of gray in here. But typically, the sensor is either going to fail shorted or it's going to fail open, and that's it. It's not going to go off calibration where, man, it just doesn't seem like it's running. Say the temperature is running 220 degrees, and you're like, and I'm not blaming the sensor for that. I'm not saying the sensor is out of calibration, and it's just reading higher than it should be. That doesn't happen. I don't see that very at all, really. It is important to use a temp gun. You can go down to like anywhere and just get a cheap little radar gun. They're not a radar gun, the laser temp guns, you know, you point at. Super valuable tool. In fact, as of lately, I started using the thermal imaging one, because those have gotten really cost effective. You can get a good little thermal imaging one. And you don't have to go super fancy and get the FLIR? I can't even remember the name right now, but you know what I'm talking about. They make a really nice one. You don't really need that. You just get like a cheaper one with a little 2 or 3 inch screen. And when we're talking about heating problems, cooling problems, we can use this for electrical problems. I'm just going to dive into this because I think this is really, really cool stuff that you can use. And it's a fairly inexpensive tool to use for this. So if you have a heating problem, you can use that and actually see where the hot pockets are or where the cold pockets are. When I said hot pockets, now I'm hungry. But you can see, like, if a radiator has a restriction in it or if it's being restricted, you can see the color and see the mapping and see the coolant flow through the radiator, right? Through that thermal imaging. And you can see, oh, well, look at that. There's a cold spot right there. So we got a restriction. You can see if the thermostat's opening. You can see the color, you know, if the upper hose is really hot and the bottom one's really cold. And you can do that with the radar pointer too. You can see the temperature difference. And there should be a little bit, but you shouldn't have like a 100-degree difference between the two with the thermostat open. So it's really valuable tools that really quickly assess the cooling system. But beyond that, if you have a misfire or you want to see how the engine's running, you can use it pointed at the headers or the exhaust manifold, and you can see each port, right? You can see the temperature. Some of the older vehicles don't have the misfire data in the computer. Some of them don't even have a computer you can hook into, like the 1990s and earlier. You get into the carbureted vehicles and you get, you know, the engine's running a little rough. Well, you can just point that thermal imaging at the headers, and you can see which one is colder than the rest of them, or hotter, right? And you can see if you have a lean running condition, or if you can see if you have a spark plug that's not firing, and you don't have to do the old cylinder balance where you pull each wire off, or your dad made you pull each wire off because he didn't want to get shocked, so you got shocked for him to find out which one doesn't have spark, right? So you just use this gun, you point at it, and within like 15 seconds, you know which cylinder's misfiring. So super cool tools when it comes to using this stuff. And I got to take a break, but I'm going to dive back into it when I get back.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero. See their online specials at aceautocare.com.
Fox News, I'm Jack Callahan. Still no clear answers on the source of the suspected drones flying over a handful of states.
Why isn't the Department of Defense, and Austin in particular, Lloyd Austin, calling for bring one of them down? Find out and do it over an unpopulated area or over the ocean. Find out who's sending them.
New Jersey Congressman Chris Smith. The bird strike gives a scare to passengers and crew aboard a commercial airliner over New York.
An American Airlines flight bound for North Carolina had to turn around and land at John F. Kennedy Airport late Thursday after taking off from nearby LaGuardia. A burr took out one of the plane's two engines. The pilot declared an emergency but was able to land safely with nearly 200 people on board.
Fox's Tom Graham reports there were no injuries. South Korea's parliament voting to impeach President Yoon Suk-yeol over his attempt earlier this month to impose martial law. America's listening to Fox News.
The Republican Party of San Luis Obispo County invites you to a special evening of celebration and holiday cheer Wednesday, December 18th at the Atascadero Lake Pavilion as we honor retiring supervisor Debbie Arnold for 12 incredible years of service. Enjoy a delicious lasagna dinner catered by Science Catering. Doors open at 5:30, dinner at 6:30. Come celebrate Debbie's courageous leadership and dedication to our community December 18th. Register today at rpsloc.org. Donations just $50. Paid for by the Republican Party of San Luis Obispo County.
Tonight from 6 to 9 p.m., it's the annual Vine Street Victorian Christmas Showcase. A present to the community from the Paso Robles Main Street Association, the City of Paso Robles, and Vine Street neighbors and businesses. Stroll down historic Vine Street between 8th and 21st Streets and see beautifully decorated homes, Scrooge, the Snow King and Queen, and Santa and Mrs. Claus. Vine Street Victorian Christmas Showcase. Tonight from 6 to 9 p.m.
Are you ready to elevate your golf game and experience the beauty of San Luis Obispo County? Introducing the 2025 SLO County Golf Cart. It's your ticket to an unforgettable golfing season. For just $125, enjoy unlimited access to not one, not two, but three incredible courses, Morro Bay, Chalk Mountain, and Dairy Creek. But there's more. When you buy your SLO County Golf Cart, you receive a free round of golf at Morro Bay, one free round at Chalk Mountain, a free round at Dairy Creek, and even a free hour at Swing Time. You also celebrate your special day with a free round of golf on your birthday. Take advantage of the special rate of $15 for a round of golf through March 29th of next year. Ready to swing into action? Then purchase your 2025 SLO County Golf Cart at any of the pro shops or online at slocountygolf.com.
Prices go up January 1st, 2025.
We see you sitting there, daydreaming about an escape, a place where infinite horizons mean more freedom. Well, we're going big this December at Chumash Casino Resort, giving away over $600,000 in cash and prizes. That'll jingle your bells. Everything you need to find yourself elsewhere. Drawings every Sunday. And hey, welcome to freedom. Ho, ho, ho. Must be present to win. Must be 21 or older. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
And welcome back in. You're tuned in to Gearhead Radio. Hey, phone lines are open. 805-238-5775. That is 238-KPRL. Feel free to give me a call, interrupt at any time. I'm just up here rambling, trying to educate the masses. I don't know who put me in charge of that, but I'm trying my best. Hopefully, someone somewhere is taking one thing away from what I'm doing here every Saturday. That's all I can ask for. If you haven't tuned in before, this is Gearhead Radio. And I'm your host, Jimmy Purdy from Shifting Gears Auto Repair, located right here in Paso Robles. Here for today and today only for the next hour to bring you the latest and greatest in automotive repair and console you if the best I can. If you don't get a chance to call in during the show, you can check us out at 1621 North River Road right here in Paso Robles. Give us a call at the shop, 805-238-6202. I can't always guarantee that I'm going to answer the phone because Kevin and Melissa just do a way better job than me answering the phone. I'm not much of the talker, as you can tell. So if they put me on the phone, someone will call, I'll be talking to them for an hour and a half, not getting anything done. So it's probably a better idea I stay in the back. So that's what I do. Speaking of being in the back, I want to circle back to the temp sensor question because I feel like I went over that a little quickly and I missed some kind of like important stuff. So if the temp sensor does go bad, right? I think that's where we're going with that. I talked about the gauge not moving. So if the check engine light's on, that's why it's really difficult to say you're going to be fine if the check engine light's on. You're not getting any runability issues or drivability issues. There's thousands of reasons why the check engine light comes on. It's kind of unfortunate, but that's the simplest way I think the engineers build these vehicles can do it. The one light that rules them all, really. So sometimes it's really important. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it is just the gas cap door. And if you've noticed on the newer vehicles, they've actually added a separate light just for the gas door because they realize, okay, maybe we shouldn't be alerting, you know, the driver of this vehicle with a check engine light. That could mean that the transmission's going out for something as simple as the gas door or the gas cap being missing. So they've added a separate light for that. I think there's a few more they should add, but who am I? So it's important when that check engine light comes on to get it checked out right away to know what's going on. Because if the temp sensor has gone bad, there's a few things that's going to happen. You could have poor fuel economy. The engine could be overheating, right? Like I said, if that sensor wire has been disconnected, there's a possibility that the gauge might just be reading where it should be, because the computer output is just going to set that gauge where it wants it to be, and the engine could be overheating, and you don't know it. I'm not saying that's likely or that's what's happening. I'm not trying to scare anybody here. I'm just saying that it's a possibility. But the biggest one is poor fuel economy. You know, the temp sensor is designed to make sure that the computer knows what temperature the engine's at, and so it's going to regulate fuel economy accordingly. When it's cold, it's going to run a little bit richer or have a little bit more fuel to make sure that the engine gets warmed up a little quicker, because the warmer the engine, the more efficient it is. So it's going to add fuel to try to warm it up. If it doesn't know it's warmed up and it thinks it's cold all the time, you're going to be using an excessive amount of fuel. So keep that in mind. Another telltale sign is the cooling fan, irregular cooling fan operation, because again, that sensor also tells the computer when to turn those electric fans on. So it's much more than just the gauge telling you what temperature the engine is. The engine, the computer, the vehicle relies on that sensor for many other functions, from how the AC operates to how much fuel you're going to use, even how the transmission shifts. Right. If the engine's cold, it's going to make sure that the transmission shifts a little bit later because it wants the engine to rev up just a little bit more between the shifts until it gets warmed up. So sometimes you could have transmission shifting issues that's caused by something as simple as an engine coolant temp sensor. I'm not saying if you're feeling something with your transmission, go change that part. That's not what my advice is right now. What I'm saying is your check engine light's on, get it looked at by an expert so you know what's going on. And it does cause a lot of weird problems. You'd be surprised, something simple like that, the amount of other systems in that vehicle that are affected by that and how many problems something as simple as that one sensor getting replaced. Maybe it's been on for a long time. I'm not worried about it. It hasn't really seemed to change anything. And then they say it's just the coolant temp sensor, and then your transmission is starting to shift kind of funny, and you're like, great, now I need a temp sensor and I need a transmission. It's like, well, come to find out, just replacing that sensor you've been neglecting for years fixed all those problems. So everything's integrated for the most part. So how to test a coolant temp sensor, I want to touch on that just a minute. So if you're adamant enough about doing this on your own, One of the ways to do it is allowing the engine to cool, and you're going to want to find that temp sensor, of course, and then unplug it. Now, if you know how to run a multimeter on resistance, you need to look up the specs of what that is. But typically, what you want to do, if it's a one wire, make sure that you have resistance between the center pin and the body of the sensor. If it's two wire, you're going to put your two test leads on those two wires. Now, you're going to start the vehicle, you're going to set those leads there. Make sure everything's out of the way so it doesn't get caught in the fan or anything like that. But you're measuring the resistance as the vehicle warms up. Now, there's specs for it, but like I said, it's very rare to see something out of specification. What I'm looking for is a resistance change. As long as that sensor starts at a certain resistance and changes to a different resistance once it's warmed up, that's all I'm looking for. That tells me that the sensor has the ability to change its resistance internally, and it's not shorted open, and it's not shorted closed or shorted out. That's all I'm looking for. It might even start as an open. So you put your leads on there and it says OL, open line. If you're familiar with a multimeter, you know what I'm talking about. If not, just bear with me for a minute here. So you can test it and then you start it and you'll see all of a sudden it'll go to resistance and you'll start seeing that number climb. That's positive coefficient temp sensor. What that spec's supposed to be, in my opinion, doesn't really matter as long as it has the ability to change. That's what you're looking for. So I hope that helps in that situation. Same with the one wires. You're just going from the body of the sensor to the single pin on the top. Now, some of them are what they call idiot lights. Remember the old idiot lights? And sometimes if you go to buy a temp sensor, the part store is going to ask you, is it a light or a gauge? And that's because some of them are just on or off. Some of them will just, once they get to a certain temp, the sensor closes or the sensor goes open, and that just sets the light, right? Typically, it's going to start open, and if it gets over temp, it's going to then short internally, and then the light's going to come on. That's it. It's just an idiot light. It says, hey, idiot, you're overheating. And the light comes on. That's a pretty old one. Don't see that a whole lot anymore, but the vehicles are still on the road, and that's still a valid question. So if you're going to get your sensor, make sure you know, is it a gauge or is it a light? 9 times out of 10, it's going to be a gauge. But every once in a while, you'll have a light. And that's what the light is not. It says more of an on and off switch. It is a coefficient sensor, meaning that it does change resistance, but typically it's just going to all of a sudden swing to whatever, you know, into a 0 ohms, a closed contact once it gets to a certain temp. I think I touched everything. If you have any questions, I mean, you feel free to give me a call and we can keep going on that. But I want to circle back to the thermal imaging camera because I think that's really cool. So before the break, I was talking about being able to identify engine problems with a thermal imaging camera or a temp laser gun. You know, the guys that, if you watch racing at all, you see the top fuel guys, they're usually pointing something at the exhaust to make sure that they're all within temp. It's a very valid way to know how the engine's running. Good morning, you're on Gearhead Radio.
Yeah, good morning, Jimmy.
Hey.
I've got a problem with a 2000. On the ABS light and the brake light keep coming on. Turn off the ignition, they'll go off, turn it back on. They stay off for a little while, and then some period of time, it doesn't seem to be any particular reason, they'll come back on again.
I got ABS and brake light, but you broke up. What vehicle was this?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a 2001 Yukon.
Oh, GMC. I should have guessed that because it's just so common on those, but they have the ABS and brake lights come on. I should have guessed that. I would have got it right. No, those early GMCs, the ABS modules, there's two common problems that I see. One of the issues is the motor itself. It's a typical DC motor, right? So you ever seen the fuel pumps on those Chevys? They would fail and you hit it with a hammer and all of a sudden the fuel pump comes back to life?
Yes.
So it's basically the same thing that's going on with that ABS motor. Every time you cycle the key, that pump is going to do a self-test. It's just going to spin that pump for a second to make sure it can. If it stops on one of those contactors that are bad, then it's not able to turn that pump on. So sometimes just that motor itself is bad. And then the next cycle, right, you're driving down the road and the thing gets bumped around a little bit. It moves to the next, you know, contactor, and then it's able to do its self-test and everything's fine. And then sometimes you get lucky, and it's just like every time you start, it's landing on a good contactor on that motor. So that's a possibility. The more common issue I see, what's that?
I was saying, where's that motor located?
On that one, it should be under on the driver's side along the frame. So if you follow the brake lines, they'll go down into a little module, and you'll see the round motor on the side of it. Now, the other issue I see is the EBCM, which is the module itself, and that it's all contained in one block there. So on the side of that ABS unit, there's a black plastic, it's a module. And there's a relay in there that's soldered onto that circuit board. And I've seen, I've done this a lot, that relay, the solder cracks, and that relay is basically loose in there. So every time you go to cycle the key, the relay sometimes is energized, which energizes the pump. Sometimes that relay does not energize, and it doesn't energize the pump. So those are the two most common issues. Now that module, you can pull it off and you can open it up, and you'll be able to look in there. You get a magnifying glass and you'll see the little solder contact with a little crack. So I just go in there and get the solder hot again with a soldering gun, put it all back together, and it usually fixes it. If that's the problem. Yeah, you can actually fix those yourself. Now the motor, you just got to find another motor and put it on there, unless you know how to build electric motors.
I don't think we'll go there.
Yeah. But yeah, those are the two most common issues, and you can just buy that whole unit and just get it all done with. But I think they're $800 or $1,000. So if you can find a good used one, you know, at a salvage yard, it might be the way to go. But obviously, make sure when you get it scanned and see what the code is. Now, I'm just saying this is the most common issue, and everything you're describing is what I see to the T of what happens with those. But there could be something else, so just make sure if you get it scanned, it should say like ABS motor circuit relay open or ABS motor, you know, it'll say something about the ABS motor.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Appreciate that information.
I hope that helps. Have a good weekend.
Okay. Yeah, you also. Take care now. Bye.
Yeah, I get... I haven't seen one of those in a while. I'll probably get three of them next week now that we're talking about it. But pretty common on those. You know, and that's one of the ones where it comes on and then it goes away for a long time. And you're like, oh, and you forget about it. Like, oh, it must have fixed itself. It doesn't fix itself, unfortunately. Really common problem on those GM and Chevy trucks. But I got to take a break. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Love barbecue? At Chef Gregory's Barbecue Smokehouse, we're serving award-winning barbecue. Pulled barbecue pork sandwiches, baby back ribs, pork belly, chicken, and more. Right here at Atascadero at 6550 El Camino Real below the clock tower. With over 25 years of world championship barbecue competitions, now you can enjoy that flavor close to home. We also offer catering, cooking classes, and over 30 flavors of peanut brittles. Visit ChefGregory.com to explore all we have to offer. Chef Gregory's Barbecue Smokehouse in Atascadero, where Memphis tradition meets gourmet perfection.
The most wonderful time of the year is here at Agape Christmas Trees in Templeton.
Proudly serving the community for 18 years.
I'm Logan, and I'll greet you at the entrance.
And I'm Tyler. I'll help you out with your tree.
At Agape, we offer a delightful selection of 9 varieties of Christmas trees, ranging from 2 feet to an impressive 24 feet tall. Plus, you'll find tree stands, beautiful cedar garland, and fresh wreaths to complete your festive decor. Want a tree you can enjoy year after year? Check out our potted trees. We are dedicated to bringing you the freshest trees available with a fresh load delivered weekly.
Take a leisurely stroll through our 80 acres while sipping on hot chocolate by the fire. There's something for everyone here. Enjoy our free bounce house, hop on a tractor or horse and carriage ride. Fun for the whole family. Make Agape Christmas Trees a part of your family tradition.
Visit us at 625 Templeton Road in Templeton. We're open from the day after Thanksgiving until Christmas every day from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Visit agapechristmastrees.com.
Happy holidays!
Hi, Greg and Lindsay from K-John's Jewelry Company here.
K-John's is a family-owned, upscale jewelry store. Believe me, you'll think you're in some bougie city when you walk in. But we have competitive prices with online jewelers, and we still have small-town, good old-fashioned customer service.
We specialize in engagement rings, custom design, natural and lab-grown diamonds, and unique colored gemstones. We also have an impressive assortment of rocks and minerals, which make for fun and unique gifts.
We have two graduate gemologists on staff and an 11-time national award-winning jewelry designer.
That award-winning designer is Lindsay, but she's too modest to say so.
Aw, thanks, babe.
With a team of 10 awesome people ready to serve you, come by and see us this holiday season.
You'll be welcomed with a big smile and a kind hello, a complimentary jewelry cleaning so you're all sparkled up for the holidays, and even a nice warm coffee.
We are located at 5255 El Camino Real in Atascadero, right between the police station and Stagecoach.
Hi, this is Chris from We Help You Legal. Legal documents should be simple and affordable. At We Help You Legal, there are no lawyers and no high costs, just certified experts to assist you with living trusts, wills, divorce matters, corporations, and LLCs.
Hi, I'm Christina. We also offer notary services. You can find us online at wehelpyoulegal.com or call 805-237-7770.
We Help You Legal, your Central Coast legal document company.
And welcome back. You're tuned in to Gearhead Radio. Thanks for being here. We are getting down to the end of the show here. Just a few minutes left, but that's the best few minutes. Save the best for last. ABS, motor problems, CO265. It's probably the code. If I remember right, that's the EBCM. If you look that up, it's just going to tell you to replace that module. Don't do that. There is like so much content on YouTube and great information. If you're mechanically inclined enough, there is tons of videos on there to show you how to open up that module and resolder that relay. Now, of course, you want to verify the problem. So when you get it apart, just make sure you can look real close to the solder contacts. If you've ever seen solder, you know, circuit boards with the everything's kind of soldered in there, It's fairly easy to see. You kind of wiggle the relay back and forth a little bit and you'll see the crack kind of open. That's all it takes, right? It's that small little crack in that solder joint. And when you cycle the key, the computer is going to try to fire up that ABS module. It wants to run that pump, see the line pressure rise. And if it doesn't see that, it sets the code. And you get the brake light and the ABS light because it's one and the same. And then, of course, you don't have ABS. It's not going to work, so you do want to get it fixed for safety issues, but there's a lot of those vehicles running around with that code going on. So, but yeah, YouTube's got a great, great source for that stuff. Or just replace it all and spend $1,000. I don't know. Good morning. You're on Gearhead Radio.
Hey, that thermal imaging gun being used under the hood, that's genius. That's that'd be a great gift.
It really is, and that was my best for last. So the other things you can do, right, is if you have brake problems, right, and it feels like maybe the vehicle's dragging, you can just point it at all the wheels and see if you got one brake that's locked up, right?
Check the rotor temperatures.
Oh yeah, and here's another good one. If you say you got like your battery's going dead overnight, right, you got a draw. Well, you can use that to actually look at the wire, because if the wire is drawing electricity,
current,
it's gonna be warm. So you
I
can actually
R.
Yeah, you can open the fuse box, see what fuse is hot, see what relay is hot, and then you can track down draws that way. I mean, it's such a useful tool, and it's really, once you start using it, you're like, wow, I can like everything's heat. Everything's
the company that's making those.
Everything's heat related, and they're not that expensive anymore. Like the FLIRs, when they first came out, they were thousands of dollars, and now, right, I think you go down Harbor Freight, you get it for like $120, and it's not super great, but it gets the point. But you can get really nice ones, and then you can really start dialing in that stuff. But you know, for what we do, for a quick analysis of what we're trying to, you know, accomplish, especially engine running problems on some of these older ones, you can start seeing if a spark plug's getting fouled. You can look at each header tube and see which ones, you know, it's a really, really quick way of doing it, and you don't have
to
touch the engine.
Sure expressed it well. I appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. Well, thanks for the call.
Yes, sir.
All right. Bye. Yeah, really cool. I mean, farm equipment, vehicles, it's just everything. You start using it in your house, right? Like, they're pretty cool tools. It's science. Science rules, as Bill Nye used to say. Remember Bill Nye, the science guy? Be amazed how much content I watch that's not automotive related, that has everything to do with automotive repair. There's a YouTube channel I watch a lot called Alpha Phoenix, and I say this to like everybody because he does the theory of electrical and how electrons move through the wires and how circuits work, and it's a little too deep as far as needing to know, but it's just really interesting. And honestly, in this day and age, with the vehicles are, if you don't understand how the basics of electricity works, you're not diagnosing any vehicles anymore. You might get lucky. You can throw the code scanner on there and it sets a code for an oxygen sensor, say, for example, and you put an oxygen sensor on and then the code goes away and you fixed it and now you're God, right? You've accomplished what we all seek out to try to accomplish. And that high of fixing a vehicle will then just put you on a crash course to be an automotive technician, right? Because you're like, that was the coolest thing I've ever done. I can't believe I fixed it. I can't either if you just put a part in there based on a code. But it does happen, you know, and you throw enough parts at a vehicle, eventually it will be fixed, right? But the coolest part is when you know exactly what you're replacing and why. And so I like watching those videos that really go into the construct of how Hall effect sensors work and how electrons in the wires flow. And like I said, it seems a little unnecessary, but it really isn't. Vehicles, everything in the vehicles has sensors that run everything. You know, control area networks, CAN communication lines. We've been using those for decades now. And that's basically using, you know, having all the computers tied into one network of wires and having them communicate to one another. I mean, you're speaking binary here, where you have to actually get in there and see if the computers are communicating with each other effectively, like they should be. You know, and then Hall effect sensors, AC waveform pulse generated sensors, like ABS wheel speed sensors and transmission speed sensors. Knowing how those things actually work, it doesn't really matter what the specs are. If you look in, you know, what is the sensor in this vehicle supposed to be when you're reading it? Like, that doesn't really matter. And it goes back to the talking I was talking about with the ECT sensor, the temperature sensor. The specs do matter, but if you understand what that sensor is trying to accomplish or why the engineers installed that sensor and what they're trying to accomplish with that there, then it doesn't really matter, like, all that other stuff, because you know what that sensor should be doing. And in that sense, you know what you're looking for, right? Because you know why that sensor's there and what the computer of that vehicle is trying to accomplish. So on down a little bit of a rabbit hole there with electrical theory, but it is important. You know, it's important to know how that stuff works. And it takes a lot of time, a lot of research, and a lot of education to really, like, understand this stuff. And then they got new stuff coming out all the time in these vehicles, right? Where we got to reinvent the wheel and figure out how, okay, why is this in here? Why do they use this sensor to do that? And then you dive down that rabbit hole and, now it makes sense. Now I understand, right? The TPS sensor, the throttle position sensor, that's like one of the first ones that came into play. And it basically just tells the computer where the throttle blade is, right? How much throttle you're giving it. Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? Like, of course you want the computer to know how much pedal you're giving the engine. That way the transmission can shift correctly. That way it can add as much fuel as it needs. Just makes sense, right? Then you get like a mass airflow sensor, which then goes right behind the air cleaner that measures how much airflow is coming in to the engine. Like, what is this thing that they're putting on now? And then you understand, oh, this measures how many grams of air per second is getting into the engine. Well, that makes sense, because then they can really fine tune. So sometimes at half throttle, you're accelerating quickly. Sometimes at half throttle, you're going up a hill, so you're not accelerating quickly. So you get the difference of how much airflow is coming in, because even though the throttle plate's at a certain position, there's a lot of different variables. Maybe you're going downhill. Maybe you're going uphill. Sometimes you need less fuel. Sometimes you need more fuel. Oh, now I see why that's there. All right. Same with the oxygen sensors. And just every sensor they've added to these vehicles, it makes sense once you know what they're there for. So I know it seems like a lot of stuff, but it does all make sense. Most of it, anyway, eventually. Well, that's it for my rant and raving today. I'll be here next Saturday, so be sure to mark your calendars, 9 a.m. next Saturday. Have a great week, everybody, and happy holidays. Have a good weekend. See ya.
Gearhead Radio with Jimmy Purdy is brought to you by Shifting Gears in Paso Robles on River Road. You can trust Jimmy and his team to take care of you and your vehicle the first time, every time. You're listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL 99.3 FM. Paso Robles, Tascadero, and Templeton.